Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Where you stand? LA living gridlocked in the fast lane. Trying to strike a rich match, play my cash game. At least a couple degrees from the coast where they got bunnies and bricks. Welcome to another edition of the Burn the Breeze podcast on the Fansmanship Podcast Network. Owen Main is here. That's me, along with Nick Wynn. Nick, what's happening? You know, it's going okay. Cal Poly got two wins this week, and just when you left them for dead, Nick Wynn, and I'm going to blame you for leaving them for dead, they came back and got a pair of solid wins, and you know, in the Big West, and really solidified their spot in a very familiar place in seventh place. A lot of other Big West games to get to as well. But before we get started, I wanted to get your quick take on a sport that's not basketball and on a conference that's not the Big West, because Cal Poly football has their signing day tomorrow, and it's a big one for Tim Walsh, given where the program was this last season with just one win. You know, definitely people are going to be looking at, you know, what kind of players Cal Poly can get in that can be instant impact guys. So I wanted to get your take. You might have seen some of the guys who they've recruited. Get your idea about who they are and how much you've been paying attention in the football offseason.
The fantastic slow staying on the Cal Poly message board has been keeping good track of the offers that have been out to players and players that have committed. Obviously, this is a weird deal this year because there was an initial signing day. So Cal Poly has already signed, I think it was five guys?
Maybe four,
Yeah, and then they had the transfer also.
And that initial signing day isn't something that they've done before. So people who are like, oh, they only signed four guys. Well, this is the actual signing day that's coming up on Wednesday.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of a weird deal. It's one of those things that it may help or hurt Cal Poly. One of those things with the initial signing day, I have a feeling that a lot of signed by bigger programs during that initial signing day, it might have fallen through, and that could help in Cal Poly's favor.
Hey, Nick, you're cutting out a little bit here. Are you there still?
Am I here?
Yeah, you're there. I think you're cutting out a little bit. I'm gonna move my computer to a different place here and see if that maybe helps the Skype feed. Hopefully, it's not all a house of cards that comes tumbling down. Okay, keep going.
All right, do you want me to restart from there?
No, just keep talking, man.
Oh, okay. So, anyways. I feel like that this might actually help Cal Poly because some guys that didn't get offered or weren't able to sign on that initial signing day could possibly drop down and come to Cal Poly with the second signing day. It does make it weird just because, obviously this is the second time you have to go through this process. But signing day is always fun. It's always fun to hear Tim talk about the recruits and see the video about them. So it's tough at Cal Poly's level. You can't really judge a recruiting class like they do
right.
The big boys.
Right.
But optimism springs eternal. So it's always fun to watch those guys and dream on what they could be as Cal Poly football players.
Well, and the program at Cal Poly's undergone a few changes, and one of those changes in the last 4 years or so is that some of the guys who come in, Cal Poly needs them to play right away. If you would have gone on Cal Poly's roster 3 years ago, you would have looked at it and said, man, almost every single player has sat out a year either for an injury redshirt or just for a redshirt or both. And you look at more and more of these players are coming in as true freshmen, whether it's a running back or whoever, and they're getting actual playing time and Cal Poly's counting on them. And I think, one of the luxuries they used to have was some depth and that depth on the roster and throughout the roster is was a lot thinner last year and a couple of injuries really cost them toward the end of the year there and all through the year. And depth is one of those things that when you're a college football team, you can never have enough of. So it'll be interesting to see what happens tomorrow. I don't think I'll be able to make it. I have some work commitments, but I'll be keeping track. I'm sure Eric Burdick will do a great post on gopoly.com, and you can check that out. So let's get to basketball, Nick.
Yes.
On Wednesday night last week, Cal Poly hosted last place UC Riverside. The Highlanders hadn't won a game in the Big West, and Cal Poly had kind of a little lead most of the game, but coming down the stretch, they lost the lead. They got down by, I think, three, and Riverside had the ball a couple times up 3 points and failed to kind of extend that lead more than that. Cal Poly came down by one, called a clear out play for Donovan Fields, who was able to get to his spot on the elbow, knock down the jumper, put the Mustangs up by one, and they got a stop and sealed it. Cal Poly over UC Riverside on Wednesday night.
Yeah, it was funny because there was, like you said, there was definitely the feeling late in that game that that was a game that Cal Poly could lose. And Riverside obviously came in to that game winless in the Big West. They're under a lot of turmoil, as we've talked about. And I thought that the most interesting thing was Chris Sylvester on the feed, on the radio broadcast for Cal Poly, but also on the Big West TV feed, mentioned, and I think it was true, that obviously if Cal Poly had lost to Riverside, that probably would have been rock bottom for this team. There's not much more worse that you could do than to lose to that Riverside team at home. That being said, I think that that moment where Cal Poly, like you said, was down by three and was in serious danger of losing to Riverside, that moment was probably rock bottom. And they're not going to have to play Riverside at home again. They do go on the road to play Riverside, but obviously a road game is a different story. I don't know that Cal Poly can do anything worse than being in danger against Riverside at home. So that's a good thing, because then Cal Poly, like you mentioned, was able to bounce back and win a close game against Riverside, and then on Saturday night beat a decent Hawaii team at home. So
yeah,
hopefully that is rock bottom for Cal Poly, and I really do think it is. I think there's not, you know, even if Cal Poly were to go on and lose the rest of the games in the Big West, I don't think they necessarily have gotten any further towards the bottom than they did at that point when it looked like they may lose to Riverside.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask you, because, you know, Fields kind of was able to get to his spot. They didn't call a timeout. Joe Claro said, you know, we've gone over that play in practice. We've gone over that play in shoot around. We've gone over some late game situations. You know, he called the clear out, basically, and Don Fields was able to do his thing. More and more, he seems like a player who, you know, is really just so crucial to Cal Poly. Him and Vic both have really been able to set the pace, and in games that Cal Poly's won, they've been able to, you know, just be, I don't want to say dominant, because I don't know if that's the word, but just be very consistent and reliable throughout those games. And it's something that when you see Cal Poly in warmups, you see two guys who are, you know, under 6 feet, and two guys who, you know, look super small, but are guys who can play big in big spots like this one. And Donovan, you know, knocking down that shot as a junior, you know, he gives you some hope, I think, as a Cal Poly fan, and some excitement for not just this season, but, you know, into next year as well.
Sure. Yeah. They're both, obviously, you know, that they have some flaws, but that it is nice as a Cal Poly fan knowing, you know, it's always one of those things that you wonder about as a basketball fan is who's going to take that last shot for my team. And I think either one of those guys you can trust to create and get a decent shot in a crucial situation like that, a clutch situation like that. So that is one thing that I think you, as a Cal Poly fan, you have going for you, is knowing that you have those two guys on the team. I do wonder if at the end of the year, this year, or possibly at the end of the year next year, we won't really truly appreciate either one of those guys just because of the overall performance of Cal Poly, which would be a shame. But you know, both of them, I think are good players in the Big West. And I think they're both players that, honestly, they may not be stars on some of the other teams in the Big West, but I could definitely see them starting for a Santa Barbara or a Davis.
They'd get time on those teams. That's definitely a
feather in Cal Poly's cap, is that both of those guys, you know, there's been years where Cal Poly's been really bad and there wasn't a single player on the team that you really thought could play on another team in the Big West. We're on a better team in the Big West, but both those guys would be at least rotation players for those teams, if not starting.
Totally, so, totally. And we saw Cal Poly in the Riverside game, and then on Saturday against Hawaii, came out just, you know, one of the things I look for, Nick, when I'm at the games, I look for body language, and I look for facial expressions and vocal things, because those are things that if you're at the game on the sidelines, you know, you can kind of see. And I really did get a good idea that Cal Poly, that win on against Riverside, really seemed to lift their spirits. I think they were pretty down after losing at CSUN, getting blown out at home against Long Beach State, and getting blown out even worse, I think, up at UC Davis. They were really kind of down. You got the sense, and I only kind of realized it once I saw the difference between kind of the pre-Riverside, maybe a little bit more tense demeanor. And what I saw during the Hawaii game, which was kind of a free-flowing, enjoyable, guys cracking jokes with each other on the court. I don't know if I've ever taken more pictures of a Cal Poly team smiling or being demonstrative on the court since, since Chris Eversley was here or something, sure. In terms of some fun stuff happening. Kuba Nijo went 7-for-15 on the weekend. Josh Martin hit his spots. Luke Meikle hit his spots from downtown. Cal Poly on the weekend, I think, shot over 50% from three-point range and really, got the shots they wanted eventually in the clock. And a lot of kudos go to Victor. A lot of kudos go to Don for sure. But there were other guys who were like 1-for-1, like Isaiah James. Kuba shot well. Mark Crow knocked down a three, I think, on Saturday and played a pretty big role. And against a team like Hawaii, who Cal Poly hasn't been able to beat as long as they've had Aaron Gannat as their coach, Joe Calero finally got that win against Gannat. And now, looking forward, Cal Poly has three wins in conference with a bunch of games to play and doesn't have to feel that kind of pressure. They're three games or 2.5 games out of the cellar with less than half the conference season to go, and have to be feeling pretty good about at least getting into the tournament. And honestly, if you can like steal one of these next two games on the road, you can feel like, hey, maybe I can get into sixth place even if you can go to, Fullerton and win there or head to Long Beach and pull something off there. Now you can start looking up in the standings instead of just trying to keep the people below you at bay, I guess.
Yeah, and we talked about that previously, that coming into this weekend, like, there was a real question about whether or not Cal Poly was going to be able to make the tournament. And I think now it's obviously not a foregone conclusion, but I feel if you're a Cal Poly fan, you could be much more confident that that they can go to Anaheim, that they'll be in the top eight. Obviously, Riverside's probably not going to win a lot more games in conference if they win any. So having the three games and the win against them gives you that kind of hope. The one thing I did want to mention, as you talked about with the body language and kind of the confidence and that kind of thing, and I don't want to compare Riverside to either one of these teams. Riverside is a Division I team. It may be a really bad Division I team, but they're a Division I team. But it kind of reminded me of the fact that Cal Poly – early in the season, they went to the Bay Area, they lost a close game to Cal, they got blown out by Stanford. Then they come home and they beat Notre Dame or Holy Names, which, obviously it's not a Division I team, but gives you some confidence to win a game. And then they reel off two wins at Santa Clara and then against College of Charleston, the Alaska tournament. And then they have a big, long losing streak in the middle of the season in December and come home and play Notre Dame Day Namur, which again, not a Division I team, but it's at least a team, it's at least a win that you can put up on the board.
Right.
So they beat that team, and then that gives them the confidence to play against Santa Barbara and win again, beat Santa Barbara in kind of an upset. So I do feel like it is kind of a domino falling effect that when you get a win on the board, it gives you more confidence to possibly go beat another team that's better.
Yeah,
so.
And I guess the challenge is, are you going to be able to pick yourself up and motivate yourself or do whatever you need to do to get confident against when you've just lost a tough game and you're playing another tough team, because the Big West conference is tough, 1-6 right now. Hawaii was no slouch. Cal Poly came out in that game and played confident. It was interesting watching kind of the Hawaii team. Things were chippy over in Hawaii, and I know I tweeted a lot about it, but our guy Sharif, when you asked me who had the most technicals on Hawaii, he was immediately my answer a couple weeks ago on this podcast, and he gave me a technical at Cal Poly, right? He was talking the whole game, like Nick, it was like a Kevin Garnett tick, like he wasn't saying bad words or anything, but
that's just how he plays.
I'm taking pictures there, and Don back dribbles, like he's still at the hash mark. He's not like at the, he's not like running the other way. He back dribbles twice. And Sharif's yelling, "Wrong way, wrong way!" like it was interesting trash talk, but it was still trash talk nonetheless. And it was still, the ref Tony Padilla, was talking to Aaron Gannat, and I heard him say something like, "Hey, I told him absolutely no talking to the other team, and what do you want me to do?" and even after the technical, Sharif was still joking on the free throw line with Hank Hollingsworth. Both teams seem to be kind of goofy during the game on some level in terms of smiling, enjoying themselves. And I think for Cal Poly to win and for Cal Poly to play well, they got to find that kind of edge between enjoying themselves and not getting sloppy, enjoying themselves and being crisp, et cetera. I thought that was an interesting thing. The other thing I wanted to ask you about and talk to you about, because this is big news, I think, Nick. It's the fact that the Mustangs in this game against Hawaii, the second game that they won on the weekend, employed a little something that we've seen before, that we've seen be successful before, but we haven't seen it in a few years. And that is the Joe Calero patented matchup 2-3 zone. And I wanted to get your take and thoughts on seeing the zone once again from this Cal Poly squad, who hasn't shown it, you know, really in the last, what, like 2 to 3 years in terms of being able to run it effectively.
Yeah, they went through a stretch where, you know, obviously when Joe first took over the program, that was pretty much all they ran was that matchup zone. That was kind of what he was known for. That's what the team was known for. That and playing really kind of slow down and grinded out basketball, which was part of that playing that zone. And then there was for some reason a switch clicked after the team went to the tournament and had some success where they kind of got into the mentality they were going to play a lot more man-to-man. Joe's kind of experimented with a 1-3-1 trapping.
Yeah, since Nawaba's senior year when they went to that 1-3-1.
Obviously was playing off his strengths, but he still kind of got that in the bag. Yeah, he breaks out every once in a while. They'll still show some full court pressure every once in a while. But that matchup zone was really something that they played almost exclusively the first 3 or 4 years that Joe was at Cal Poly, and has kind of gone away since then. So that's an exciting thing. One of the interesting things is that thus far this year, Cal Poly hasn't been very good defensively. We know that, but in four games, they've managed to hold their opponent to under a point per possession, which is pretty good.
Right.
Of those four games, one was the game against College of Charleston. Oh, I'm sorry. One was the game against Idaho.
Okay.
One was the game against Santa Clara, and then the other two were both of the games against Hawaii. Now, obviously, they beat Santa Clara and
lost to Idaho.
I'm sorry, not Idaho, but it was Central Michigan. They actually lost to Central.
But they should have won that game, man.
Yeah, that was true. But the Hawaii game, they've been able to stifle Hawaii both on the islands and at home. So whether that's a matter of how Hawaii plays, obviously bringing that matchup zone back on Saturday helped.
Yeah.
On Thursday, they were not good defensively. They gave up 17 points to Adi Diallo, who was basically a bench player.
He's built like Dwight Howard. Guy. I swear he's built like Dwight Howard.
He's a very physical
specimen. And he wears number
12,
and he's got like a upside-down V neck. It's crazy.
Yeah, no, he's definitely an athlete. He went to, I want to say, was at Arizona State before he came to Riverside. So, I mean, he's got that kind of athletic talent, but for some reason, Cal Poly made him look like an absolute star in the Big West, which he has not done in any other game since he's been at Riverside. So that was worrisome. But then against Hawaii, they were actually able to kind of lock down, play well on the 2-point side while not sending Hawaii to the line too much. And it was a good defensive effort from Cal Poly in that game. And if that matchup zone really is coming back, then hopefully that's a welcome signal for the second half of the season, and they can play better defensively because they'll have to do that in order to win any games.
Yeah, Joe talked about different guys getting healthy. You know, Carlos is still a couple weeks away from being healthy, he said on Wednesday. But Hank, I guess, was injured a little bit too, and so that's why we didn't see him as much. And Luke had to play some at the five and Josh at the four. You know, when Luke and Josh are kind of subbing in and out for one another, you always have that kind of guy who can get buckets, you know, individually and kind of more of a one-on-one situation. And you can keep Hank in the game. If you can keep him in the game for long enough, you know, he's going to be a defensive, issue for the other team.
Sure.
They're trying to get into the paint. And I thought you saw him a lot more springy this weekend. You know, he even had a couple of decent little post moves, left-handed jump hooks, you know, at the bucket. But buckets that Cal Poly needs him to be confident in making if they're going to be, you know, a team that's going to take advantage of easy buckets inside, and they need somebody else to pick that up inside. And then Alex Abrams went, and I think it was the Hawaii game, maybe it was the Riverside game. I did blurs together now. Got 7 rebounds and 0 points in like 13 minutes of play. Basically got like 4 or 5 defensive rebounds in a row. You know, just really, really made a little impact. And again, when you can get something out of those big guys, when you can get some kind of positive impact, when they can hold their own, because Don and Vic and some of those guards, Marcellus when he's playing, and Cal Poly didn't have him all weekend either. When some of those guards and wings get going, you don't need the big men to be focal points of your offense. You need them to contribute one way or another. And when those guys can find some rhythm in contributing and some roles, et cetera, I think, you know, it's a Cal Poly team that I don't think, I mean, I don't know, they're not great still, but they're a team that's going to be a problem potentially for any team in the Big West. And I guess it depends on matchups a lot. And I want to get to now what you thought about other games in the Big West. Of course, you know, you had Santa Barbara, I think, matching up against, was it Long Beach? Who did they play?
Yeah, well, there was, and Davis, it was funny because there were four teams that won two games this weekend.
Interesting.
Cal Poly, obviously, yeah. won two games, swept the weekend. And then I would say the other three teams that swept the weekend were the teams that you would think right now are the three kind of top contenders in the Big West. Santa Barbara, obviously, Davis, which is right there with them. And I'll pat myself on the back a little bit because I called this kind of coming into the weekend. But Irvine had a really great weekend, and I think they're starting to round the form. And to me, they're clearly the third best team right now in the conference at worst. So
right.
It was kind of weird how that worked out, that it was those four teams, our Mustangs, winning two games, and then those other three teams that probably have a much better chance at winning the conference that managed to put some space between them and teams like Long Beach and Fullerton and Hawaii. So obviously the barn burner of the weekend was the crazy double overtime Davis Long Beach State game. TJ Shorts makes this ridiculous 1-footed 40-foot shot. No one can still figure out why he shot with 2.5 seconds left. Weird. Like
try to get a rebound, maybe.
I suppose, or didn't understand how much time was left on the clock. It was kind of a weird deal.
Who cares?
But
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of really great games. That was a fantastic game.
Gabe Levin dropped 45 in that game, Nick. 45 points in a college game.
Yeah. That was nuts. And obviously, it was a weird deal with Davis. You know, it was a great weekend for Davis to do that with the news breaking late on Thursday that Chino Neke is suspended.
Indefinitely.
At least in the interim. Yeah, and indefinitely. So for Davis to go and win those two games was especially on the road at Long Beach was a big deal. So
that, but and, then there was and, also and that means that two of my top five, you know, 5 to 7 players in the conference coming into the season are now suspended indefinitely in Chima Moneki and then Dikembe Martin, who didn't make the trip with Riverside to Cal Poly either.
Yeah, which is kind of crazy. So and it really opens up. I thought Chima was probably kind of the front runner for Big West Player of the Year. There's a lot of guys that you could think about giving it to. We talked previously about Kyle Allman, Gabe Levin, Max Heidegger, but that kind of opens up that door.
Yep.
So,
yep.
But not to be overshadowed that it was late. It was a late game because it was on the islands. But Santa Barbara goes to Hawaii and wins in overtime.
It was in Santa Barbara. Because it was a late game.
It started with like a 7:30 or 8 o'clock start on ESPN. But
so the losers of the weekend then were Hawaii and Fullerton, really, right? I mean, in terms of dropping some games.
Oh no, for sure. Yeah, Hawaii obviously lost to Long Beach State. Lost to, although it's tough to call them a loser. Obviously, they had that real close game with Davis. They played a real close game with Irvine as well, and that they were in it right to the end.
Right.
So. But two losses are two losses. So I do feel like that kind of creates some separation. Right now, you know, Santa Barbara's on top with Davis right behind him at 7-2. Irvine's right there at 3 at 6 and 6 and 3. But those other teams are still right there. 6-4, 5-4, 4-4, Long Beach, Fullerton, Hawaii, respectively. So it's still really anyone's game. But I do feel like things are starting to fall into place in terms of Santa Barbara and Davis kind of asserting themselves at the top, and then now Irvine's looking like they're the best of the other four. So
and if you're a Cal Poly fan, you look at glass half full. You can say, man, you sweep another weekend, and you're in sixth place. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, sure.
Like, you know, you're like, man, get me out of that top two seed. You know, maybe you can play a Davis team without Chima if you make it that far. You know, like, there's all kinds of. Everything's still in front of you, I guess, is my point in the Big West, and it always is, and in college sports in general. You know, you could say that about, you know, you could have said that about Cal Poly football until the last really 3 weeks of the season, despite the bad season they had. You know, like, opportunities abound every week, every game, opportunities to get better. And it's one of my favorite things, again, about college sports. And it's one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about it here on the Fansmanship podcast. Sure. And on the site.
And I think there's a good chance. I mean, look, Cal Poly's not going to be favored in either one of those games. No. But I think they match up well with Fullerton.
Yeah, they showed that before. And that zone against Fullerton could be a problem against a team that absolutely wants to get to the basket. You know, that matchup zone against Taylor and Fullerton could be an issue. And against Irvine as well. You know, Irvine's going to have to shoot their way out of that if Poly's going to employ that kind of progressively more and more. And listen, this matchup zone thing could also backfire. You know, it could have just been that those guys were playing it really well. Poly gave up some good shots out of it too that Hawaii just missed, because Hawaii is not the greatest shooting team. But, you know, as long as Poly doesn't give those shots to Jackson Rowe and Kyle Allman, or excuse me, Jackson Rowe and Khalil Ahmad, those wide open ones, you know, I think I take my chances with Kyle Allman taking a jumper with a hand in his face. And same with a lot of those other guys on that team. So, you know, I give Cal Poly a fighting chance against either of those teams, especially if they have a little second round curveball to throw at them. I wanted to kind of get to my, since Nick Wynn didn't have a neato stat of the week, slacking on your duties, Wynn.
Yeah, I am slacking. Since it is now Owen Main's exciting stat of the week, sponsored by the Harlem Globetrotters, February 19th at Rutbank Arena, I will blame the fact that I had to, I was escorting El Gato Melendez from the Harlem Globetrotters around Bakersfield yesterday, visiting some kids at the hospital and doing some nice school presentations and seeing some news media folks. So unfortunately, because of my duties with El Gato, look him up on YouTube. He's awesome.
Yeah.
I was unable to come up with a neato stat of the week, but Owen is going to sub in and have a fantastic neato stat of the week.
And I'm sorry that I'm sick too. Sorry for the coughing and haranguing in my throat. You know, I just moved, and I told somebody as soon as I get settled in, I'm for sure going to catch this cold that's going around. My body really didn't let me until then, but as soon as I was in here, man, it was like, okay, you can let down now.
I've had that flu. I think everyone is going to have that flu at some point this year because it's terrible. Yeah,
and for me, it's more of a cold, but it might turn into it. Who knows, man? I'm just trying to take it day by day. But, you know, in the Big West, when you have, you know, sometimes you split games on a week because there's not an even number of teams, but at some points there have been even numbers of teams. And so you might have two games on the road or two games at home with a traveling partner if you're in this conference, or if you're in kind of any conference, really. It's not like the Pac-12 where it's absolute that way unless you're playing your rival. But for Cal Poly, you know, they get two or three kind of home weekends a year in the Big West, and that means that, you know, opportunities to win a pair of games in a row at home on a Thursday and Saturday or a Wednesday and Saturday consecutively. And I kind of take it as Wednesday, Saturday or Thursday, Saturday, as opposed to like a Saturday and the following Wednesday. Right. So, so that's not a home weekend for me, but a Wednesday, Saturday or a Thursday, Saturday is. And my question for you is, when was the last time? Cause Cal Poly did, win, consecutive games in conference in a home weekend. When was the last time that happened, Nick?
I feel
how many,
like it
how long has it been for the Mustangs?
I feel like it was a few years ago.
Yeah, it was a few years ago, yeah.
I'm gonna say 2014, and I think it was Long Beach State and Irvine.
Okay. Well, it was 2015. It was David Nwaba's senior year, but David Nwaba was not playing that weekend. I don't have it right in front of me. You can look it up if you want to. It's the 2014-15 season. And I can look it up too, I guess, but I'll let you look it up. It was a weekend where Nwaba was having some heart issues. If you remember his senior year.
Oh, that's right. And, he did have that. Yeah.
And so like
regular heartbeat.
So it was like Brian Bennett and, you know, got a little bit of a flow halfway through that year. And I think it was like Fullerton and Long Beach State, back-to-back at home. I feel like it was like the Long Beach State team that had that guy who played at UCLA for a minute. And I expected him to be really, really good, and he like barely played in that game. That guy who was
you like are the, actually kind of correct. It was Northridge and Long Beach.
Northridge. Well, they did it twice that year. So they did it once.
Yeah, they did do it twice. But the other one was Fullerton and Riverside.
Okay, so I knew Fullerton. Well. Right. Okay, so it was CSUN and Long Beach. And Long Beach had, and I forget his name now, but I voted for him for like all pack or all Big West preseason that year because I thought he was going to be really good. He played for Long Beach. Do you remember his name? He was at UCLA for a minute.
Tyler Lamb.
Yeah, Tyler Lamb, dude. How did Tyler Lamb not dominate the Big West? I remember thinking, oh my God.
He only played 7 minutes in that game.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I remember going like, oh, what's going on with Long Beach? And Long Beach really hasn't been the same since that season in terms of being a dominant Big West team. Really, I guess since they lost kind of Casper Ware and our guy James Ennis, who is a friend of UU. For the Perth Wildcats and is in the NBA. I think he plays for the Grizzlies, right? Heat maybe. Yeah. All right. And so Long Beach and CSUN came in that weekend and like Cal Poly went like seven deep one of those games. They had a ton of guys who were hurt. Zach Gordon, I think, missed that whole season maybe. That was his knee season, I think. Or at least he didn't play in either of those games.
Yeah.
Brian Bennett.
That game against Northridge, it was almost actually a six-man rotation.
Yeah,
with Reese Morgan coming off the bench, and not only did our friend and the Italian Stallion and
Silvestri
get 5 minutes in that game, but also who played 6 minutes? But the walk-on supreme
KJ Logue
played 6 minutes in that game.
That's what I'm saying. So Pauly really had to kind of show out. Ridge had a great weekend, I believe. Brian had a pretty darn good weekend. And I'm trying to think of one other guy, Awich, I think.
Awich had a really good weekend.
Be good, and he was. And so, the Mustangs got two wins then in conference, and you think of those names and they seem kind of recent, but actually, that was what, three years ago. And so for, three seasons or 3 years, Cal Poly's had a hard time in 16 and 17. They weren't able to sweep a conference weekend. And of course, when you're seventh place 4 years in a row, seventh place team only probably wins four or five, four games in conference during the season anyway, five. So, it's not like you're going to be guaranteed to win a lot of games, and those don't always back up, back to back. So, other teams who are, maybe having winning records in conference have that happen often. It was actually an interesting week at Cal Poly. I believe there were nine home games or matches for different Cal Poly athletics, and they won all nine of them this past week.
Yeah, which is crazy. Yeah, there's a real neat graphic that the athletic department put out. Yep. But yeah, it was what, men's and women's basketball each won two. Tennis had a great weekend.
Yep.
Swimming won a dual meet. So,
and I think
it's just crazy. Like, I remember going to Cal Poly and working at Cal Poly. Like, we would have weekends where none of the teams would win in the weekend,
right?
And that was always a bummer. But to have a weekend where every team swept is pretty amazing and pretty awesome. Yeah, so
that many home events, I guess that's pretty cool. Speaking of the rest of the athletic department, women's basketball is killing it right now. Can't do a Burn the Breeze without a shout out to the Leo Pepe sisters. Devin Standback's been kind of a revelation for me for the Mustangs, really holding down in the post, in the paint. Kind of gets overlooked sometimes, I think. And the little point guards, there's a couple of them who have kind of, along with Dice Daly, I'm trying to picture the girl from San Francisco and her name. She's left-handed, I think. But they've really, done a good job of kind of developing and kind of getting better. Everybody on that team has got a little bit better over the last couple of years. Emily Anderson, the Central Valley product, has a strong pick and pop game as well. So,
the Lou Pepe tunes are going to be, they're going to go down in history as, two of the more fun players to ever watch at Cal Poly. It was funny because I just saw something recently. I think it was either the Cal Poly posted it or the Varsity Club posted it with the O'Halloran sisters.
Who
dominated volleyball for years and years from Aurora Grande.
Yeah, they were from AG, Cal Poly, huh? And they went to, I remember them because they were around my age, maybe a little bit older. I remember that name for sure. And yeah. I didn't realize they'd gone to Cal Poly too. That's interesting.
Yeah. So Cal Poly's had, and they've, you know, obviously they've had a huge tradition of family members playing together, whether it's those two or the Lutuliasa Noah family or the Muhammad family in football. Yeah.
The linebackers, who is that? Not Beck, but, oh man.
He won it with
Gokong, Beck, and Shotwell, the Shotwells too. Yeah.
Yeah. The Shotwell family. Yeah. From Santa Barbara. Uh-huh. So yeah. That's always kind of neat when you have multiple family members. And obviously it's kind of cool with the LaPepe sisters since they're twins, but that's pretty awesome.
The Who brothers in baseball.
Yep. Oh, yep. Yep. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The Van Oostrens. So, so that's pretty cool. So I think that's a pretty neat thing. And I know it's going to be an exciting weekend for Cal Poly, because I know they're also doing the Play for K game, which is very close to Faith Mindaugh's heart. Kay Yao, she coached under. And so that will be a cool game where they raise some money for cancer research and that kind of thing at the home game this weekend. So that'd be pretty neat. So go out and watch Cal Poly, the Cal Poly women. Like you said, they're on fire right now.
Yeah, I think they play at 2 o'clock. Right? You know, it's a great game to take your kids to, because it's not too late. It's a 2 p.m. game. You know, if you have a kid who takes a nap, go for it. You know, you can do an early nap, get there, check out the game, and still be home in time for dinner very easily. And definitely kind of a family oriented place to check out. So check out the women's basketball team. Nick, other Big West thoughts this weekend. You talked about TJ Shorts, you talked about Davis, and you talked about UCSB being able to get over. I guess you'd consider then, you know, Long Beach, like you said, kind of a loser, two losses, even though they're still, you know, a very good team and a team that I know I'm not looking forward to watching Cal Poly play. Sure. You know, it's not a team you really are going to have an easy time against ever. And then Fullerton as well, you know, one of those teams that was real hot early in the season. I don't know how many teams have been in first place in the Big West after, you know, after the different games in the Big West, you know, since week one. But I got to think it's been at least four or five different teams have kind of cycled through that. And now you kind of get to the cream rising, I guess, where Davis and Santa Barbara, I think, or is it Irvine and Santa Barbara?
Davis and Santa Barbara are now tied.
And they're going to play. And they're going to play this weekend, I think, in the first game of the weekend.
It's good because, unfortunately, when you look at the schedule, this upcoming week schedule in the Big West, there's not a lot of marquee games that really jump out at you. Obviously, we'll be paying attention to the Cal Poly games, but there's a lot of games with teams where you kind of think, wow, that's a pretty easy game to predict. So it's good that we do have the marquee matchup of the season thus far in the Big West on Thursday night with Santa Barbara going to Davis at 7 o'clock. So that should be a fun one. It should establish who really is the top gun in the Big West. Santa Barbara, obviously, I think is probably the better team, but going to Davis, my guess is that Davis will probably be favored slightly. So,
Davis hasn't lost a home game in like 2 years, I think.
No, yeah. So that, and it's always a tough place to play to go up there, especially on a Thursday night, where you assume that Santa Barbara is probably busing up on Thursday morning. They've got classes all week. So
they're busing up on Wednesday. They're not going on Thursday. I'm sure they'll go on Wednesday. Yeah.
It's still a long bus ride to go on one day, still I mean, that's a tough trip to make, probably the second toughest trip in the conference, like to Hawaii. So that should be a fun matchup to watch. Fullerton then comes in and plays Davis on Saturday, which again will be interesting because even though Fullerton has kind of taken a step back, they're still a very good team. And Davis, we'll see if Maneki comes back. Obviously, it's looking like he probably won't, but Davis could really make a statement by beating both of those teams at home and kind of taking control of the conference. So.
Well, right. Yeah, it's kind of a swing week for Davis, right? In other words, you know, they could really take the bull by the horns and prove everybody wrong that they can win without Maneki, but also, you know, they could lose a couple games and then all of a sudden they're right back in the mixer with everybody else below Santa Barbara, right? And Fullerton could pop back up kind of into the middle of that Big West mixer, you know, which is like the 3, 4, 5, 6 spots, which just, you know, seem to just rotate all over the place every week. really, you know, 2 through 6. Santa Barbara kind of has kind of steadily risen since they lost to Cal Poly and Hawaii early in the season. I think they're probably on, what, like a 5-game winning streak or something at this point. And kind of, again, that kind of cream rising to the top, if you will. They've been, you know, they've been a really good team all year, you know, win or lose. And that'll be fun too. So coming into this week, any other predictions, thoughts, things you'd like to see? I guess Cal Poly plays at Fullerton and at Long Beach. And those are two places that I've always wanted to go watch games in Titan Gym and then also at the Pyramid. And I guess I'm going to miss out one more time. Lots going on at work, lots going on in life right now for me. You know, I've always wanted to make those Big West trips, and I was able to get to CSUN last year, but this year it's not looking good.
With this weekend is that this is one of the rare weekends where Cal Poly, they're not necessarily going to be on TV on Thursday, they're on ESPN3, but they will have that nice polished ESPN3 broadcast that we've talked about that the Big West puts on, which is always fantastic. And then Saturday night, they had that late 8 p.m. start live on Fox Sports West. So if you can't make it down to Southern California, at least you have some great broadcast options to watch Cal Poly play on TV or online through ESPN3. So
yeah, and they get a good little group that goes to games in Orange County, and especially when they've been winning, you know, they get some people. They also have, you know, a decent little following at the Big West tournament, usually not just parents, but you know, there's alumni in the LA and Orange County area who want to go support their Mustangs. So there you go. I'm going to go ahead and start us signing off here. Nick, how can people follow you on social media?
Follow me at on Twitter at Nick Wynn, tell me what you think about the Big West and how you see it playing out.
And also tell Nick what you think about the Globetrotters. You can follow me at Fansmanship, obviously, on Twitter. And if you like what you hear and you want to support us, you can also go ahead and, you know, I have a PayPal account and also what's the other one called? I don't know.
Venmo. Venmo.
I got the Venmo account too. So if you have some love that you want to throw our way, that would be great. We're trying to get ourselves at least down to the first round of the Big West tournament, maybe do a live broadcast. And any gas money is certainly appreciated. If you enjoy the podcast, have been enjoying it, certainly we'll use that to the best that we can and maybe go into, you know, baseball season with this podcast as well. I think Burn the Breeze would apply to those Mustang baseball players and team as well. Larry Lee's team is poised. I've been reading a few articles, preview stuff on D1 baseball. I think had them pegged behind Santa Barbara as fourth place.
Yeah.
But the coaches picked the Mustangs in third place this year. We'll see how some of those freshmen like Cole Cabrera and Darren Nelson, Taylor Nelson's little brother, big little brother, fare for the Mustangs this year and whether they can have as good pitching as they had last year. You know, Cal Poly was a really good hitting team, and they had two amazing pitchers last year. And really, you have to look at last season in baseball as a missed opportunity. We'll talk more about the upcoming season as this podcast rolls on. But in the meantime, we hope you have a fun week in the Big West. Hope you have a fun week in sports, and we'll catch you next week. For Nick, I'm Owen. See you next time.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. From the